Welcome to the Pixel Podcast. We're here with Jason Griffith and Pete Capella, the voices of Sonic and Silver.
You were supposed to say that. That was your cue.
I know. You were like,
I was so nervous. Yeah. I was like, Sonic.
Oh, no. Don't be nervous in this place, man. We're a bunch of goofballs.
Bunch of idiots. Yeah, so welcome in.
This is great.
Yeah, Thank you for having us, man.
I think we deserve a round of applause for these guys.
And we picked the quality.
I cannot. I'm trapped by my microphone.
You're not moving anywhere. His mic's in a funky position. That's okay. So I just kind of want to dive in and talk to you guys a little bit. Loose and Lax, Jason Griffith.
Yeah.
Most known for Sonic.
Sonic and Shadow, which is, I think most of the people I meet at conventions are split down the middle. Either you're a Sonic fan or a Shadow super fan.
Got it.
And you can always see them from a mile away because the Shadow fans are dressed like Shadow.
They're like emo kids?
They're red hair, yes. Red streaked hair, red and black, denim usually.
Wow.
Chains. But then the Sick. People dressed as yeah. Sonic... The Sonic people look like that broom. So it's usually like a costume. You know, they'll have a costume on as opposed to like, oh, you're dressed as Sonic. You threw on a Sonic costume.
And Pete?
In the Sonic universe, I voice Silver the Hedgehog, the original voice of Silver. So created the voice and then did 8 different video games.
What's that like to have created the voice?
It was insane. It was a really cool experience of just like... they don't know what they want. I don't know what they want. And so, like just finding, you know, taking the little context clues that they give you and coming up with something realistic. They told me he's a kid from the future. He's got a chip on his shoulder. I based it off one of my younger brothers who had a chip on his shoulder and they were like, he travels back in time to save his future. At the time, my brother was serving in Iraq and Afghanistan. I was like, all right, this is very much like Anthony. So I kind of gave him what he was like when he was a kid.
Did you have a different, like a close call, I guess, of one that you think may have been the voice that you were leaning towards, or is kind of what you went with, like the one that you were like, this is going to be
it's what I went with at the time. And it was the first one. So the story goes, I was literally walking out of a Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles audition for 4 Kids Productions.
Sick.
That's so awesome.
Yeah. It would have been much cooler if I got it, but I didn't.
Get waxed.
And they kept having me read for these like big bad guys. And I was out the door. The door was open and they were like, hey, Pete, do you want to come back in and try this 14-year-old hedgehog? And I was like, yeah, I mean, I guess. So I was in there doing things like this. And then it was like, hey, here's me, you know, and it's completely different range. Completely different guess on what the voice was going to be, and wound up working.
Wow, dude.
Yeah.
That is wild. What has been your guys' favorite of everything that you've done? Is your straight up this? Is the voice in Silver different from the voice in Silver in the video games, or is it completely the same thing, but more like digitized?
He started in 06. So it was all that story based, all of those games.
Wow.
Yeah, so it's all the same. He evolved as I evolved him, meaning in that first game. So Sonic 06, which was called Sonic the Hedgehog, was the first game I recorded. And that was like a phone book full of script. It was a lot of pages, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes.
Right. That like a ton of.
Yeah.
You okay? You awake?
Oh, I'm looking at all these games.
Yeah, I'm watching Jason like not care about what I'm saying. Right
shut
now.
Shut up. By the way, just to make it clear, these two are like actual friends, which I didn't know until like late yesterday.
Yeah,
I was like texting Jason, I'm like, are you guys like okay to like answer this and that? Like, are you and Pete gonna be? He's like, dude, we're like actual friends. Yeah. I was like, oh, okay, so it's good because you guys can.
Which
play
is
a little
crazy
more.
Because we did a convention 14 years ago, and then that I think that was the last one for you, but it was definitely the last one for me for over a decade because of just how horrible it was. So that was really the one of the last times I saw Pete. And then cut to last summer, we're in Los Angeles, Carson, by the airport at the Sonic.
What was it? The Sonic Revolution.
Sonic Revolution. Yeah.
Sonic Revolution convention, and there was Pete, and I was like, dude, do you want to like go on do more appearances? He's like, yeah. So we started doing more conventions, and now we travel all around, you know, the United States, hopefully soon the world, and we get to meet all sorts of cool fans. Yeah.
Greatest part, they're going to be at SoCal.
SoCal Gaming Expo. Be there. Be there.
There's so many cameras.
There's three cameras. That one's on right now.
Yeah. You know what was interesting? When I brought up your name, a lot of people knew you as Usopp.
Yes.
One Piece.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, that's an interesting franchise to work for. It has 3,000 plus episodes.
Well, I wasn't in the 3,000 plus. I was the OG Usopp from the Four Kids era, which I forget how there might have been 150 episodes or something like that. My favorite interaction with a fan was I had someone come up to my table, see the Usopp picture, say, oh, "You're Usopp, do his voice." And I was like, "Well, this is Usopp the Pirate." And he went, "That's not Usopp's voice." Like, oh, sorry, dude. The wrong version.
Were there any other collaborative efforts other than Sonic that you guys were both on?
Were you in Yu-Gi-Oh at all? I did three or four episodes of Yu-Gi-Oh.
Yeah, who was the director when you were doing it?
Dude.
Okay.
You asked me something. Who was the director 20 years ago?
That determines, like, I did.
Oh, I don't remember.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. Yes, I did Yu-Gi-Oh.
Yeah. So maybe Yu-Gi-Oh! And Jason doesn't remember this, but for that Sonic the Hedgehog 06 game, the only time I ever saw Jason, because we never, you know, you don't record together, as you guys probably know.
What?
So
with exceptions.
Right. Yeah, you usually don't record together. And so I was coming in for a session and Jason was leaving for a session. I had not met him. And they were like, "Hey, would you mind stepping in the booth with Jason?" And just, we did some background voices for the game. He doesn't remember. I do remember doing it. I don't remember what we did.
What was I wearing?
You know what? Oddly, very little. Very little.
Okay.
But I do remember it checks out. The one thing I do remember is, like, we were cracking up in the booth, whatever we were doing.
Really? Yeah. I wish I could remember this now.
Yeah. Dang, it's like a big memory for him. You don't remember anything.
Even a piece of it.
Jacked up.
But I do want to say there's, when I was doing TMNT, because I was Usagi the rabbit, we would do prelay on that, and all of us would be in the booth together, and
that's so cool.
It was so much fun. And because that was the very beginning for me, that was like the second year I was doing stuff, I was still so intimidated, and I'm like, "Oh man, I'm in the booth with all the turtles, like, I hope I don't say anything stupid," and I probably did. But it was such a cool way to record, because they would animate to what we recorded, as opposed to something like Sonic that was already animated.
Wow,
that we'd just be,
that's awesome,
matching flap and rewriting to match the flap of the mouth.
What era is that, Usagi?
2003, 2004, 2005 round.
Yeah. I think I heard in the original Turtles that they weren't expecting it to be as big as it was. So when it came out, I heard that they were like using different voice actors for the main Ninja Turtles, like, yes, every episode.
That's correct. Not every episode, but I remember watching, because I was an 80s kid growing up, watching the show, and all of a sudden Raphael would sound different. I'd be like, I want my money back, you know, sort of feeling like,
not my Raphael,
dude. It would ruin my entire day, because I'd look forward to, like, oh, I can't wait to get home,
yeah.
Pour myself a big bowl of chips, sit down in the kitchen.
It's way more than a big bowl of chips.
Now, do you guys both do VO stuff only, or are you guys doing, I know Pete, you mentioned that you do stuff as well.
I do more film and TV than I do VO, or at least an equal amount of.
Okay.
You know, and again, the business is a hustle, so you do what you can when you can.
Yes.
But we both have film and TV credits along with voiceover credits.
Oh, so you do film as well?
Yeah. I mean, my bread and butter is voiceover, you know.
Got it.
That's how I'm feeding my family at this point. If they had to live on my on-camera residuals, we'd...
Now I have to ask this. Is there, in VO world, does it matter how you look? Or is that strictly a thing?
What do you mean?
For film.
I mean, look at me. I made it.
You guys are good looking dudes, are well together. You guys, like, both this morning were like, "We're vegans and eat healthy."
I look like Barbara.
Pete came in super well dressed. He's like, "Yeah."
The audio listeners aren't getting a taste of Pete right now. Yeah. He looks like he's ready to sell me a mortgage.
It's just because I'm married, but if I wasn't, you could taste me all day long.
And then you got Jason over with a Sonic bling.
Sonic bling. Am I show some love? This is Denny Love's hoodie. I saw him in Corpus Christi.
That's sick.
When I was at my thing. But anyway, it matters in as much as if you're in a session with producers and directors and other actors, you don't want to show up in sweatpants and, you know, unbathed. If you're in your home studio recording, don't wear pants. It's fine.
Oh, nice.
But, you know, you try to, you know.
Have you ever done a nude recording?
A nude record? No, because I do have people around me. Oh. You know?
Just asking. Sorry, Curtis.
I think pressing my son questions. Would be
after
like.
After we found today. I guess that's a true. Question.
Yeah, for those who don't know, on our main channel, Pixel Game Squad, literally, as Pete met me, I found some of the rarest Atari porn games sealed.
Yeah, it's pretty great. It like, was a legit. Big moment.
Not even being weird, but that's what we found. Sorry. Yeah.
Porn in quotes for Atari.
Yes.
It was 2600, right? Not 70.
I think it was 2600.
Yeah. Yes.
Interesting enough, I mean, Riff kind of told me this fact, but I would love for you guys to kind of go into depth with it. Like, how did you guys get into like voice acting prior to this?
You first.
Okay. Completely by accident. And that's why any time someone asks me, how do I do it? I genuinely don't know. And I can be proud to say that. And it's not like I'm just trying to get them away from me. I really don't know.
I don't know, kid. Get away from me.
Get away from me, kid.
It's more like
the, he's one of the voices.
I don't know, kid. Get away from me. You know,
like, that's so sick. How much money you got?
Yeah. I was going out on camera stuff. I moved to New York from Cleveland when I was 17. And I'd just been auditioning for on-camera stuff. I'd done a national tour. And then I had always, growing up, I always wanted a video camera for Christmas, my birthday. But we grew up very poor. So I didn't get that. And instead, every year, I got a voice recorder. So every year, I would put in all the creativity that I wanted to put into that video camera into my voice recorder. So I was imitating all my relatives, all my dad's drunken friends who had done prison time, just to make people laugh, my mom laugh. And so fast forward to 2000, and I had done an outgoing voicemail message on my answering machine with an actual cassette tape. So this really dates me of like a game show host saying like, you've reached the Jason Griffith Show, you know, you know, the guests include you after the beep.
Oh, that's awesome.
And so, intolerable. Absolutely intolerable.
I think it's great.
Bro, can you do that and say Curtis's mom?
We get some VOs of Curtis's mom stuff in Sonic's voice later.
It's so funny.
But the short story is that my agent called me for an audition for something else on camera, heard that, and had just seen a breakdown for a radio commercial for BMW or something where they needed a cheesy game show host sounding voice. So sent me on the audition. This is back before self-recording happened. So you had to go to a casting studio, do it. I got the job. And then as agents do, just kept sending me out on more and more voiceover stuff. And I kept booking it and booking it and booking. And
Sonic the big break?
That was the big. Well, before that, I had been the voice of JetBlue for a couple of years.
Oh, right on.
And that was such a fantastic gig because, you know, and they offered the entire time. They're like, we'll fly you anywhere we fly if you want. And I was like, nah, that's okay. And then finally, I was like, I had a girlfriend who was like, I want to go to Puerto Rico. I was like, you guys go to San Juan? And they're like, yeah, sure. And then like I lost the account after that. I'm like, was it because I requested that free flight? So
what
anyway,
was the JetBlue
because of what you did on the plane.
Mile High Club. What was the JetBlue voice?
For two bags of chips.
Yeah.
It was JetBlue. It's not the only way to fly, but it should be.
Wow.
Then I'd say call 1-800-JetBlue or visit JetBlue.com. I can't believe I still remember this, but it was like, I was talking like that when I was 19, like trying, you know,
awesome.
It was insane. But as far as the biggest jobs that opened the most doors for me was Sonic. So if it weren't for Sonic, I really don't think I'd have any sort of career because 4Kids at the time was doing like 10 cartoons at once. Eventually I was on every single one of them. And the directors who would direct me branched out into different studios, different areas, and then they would take me along with them and I'd record for a different studio and just, you know, the snowball effect. It's real, you know, so yeah, without Sonic, I wouldn't be here right now.
How about you?
Pete would.
Yeah, I mean, I would be here, but I don't know if I would be here as Silver the Hedgehog. Obviously, you know, I started. I'm a little bit older than Jason, and definitely older than you guys.
You don't look it. Let's be honest.
Yeah.
You would never know.
I'm like your mom's age. About like I'm
you might
saying,
even be his dad.
I'm just saying. We look very similar.
Oh my gosh.
Dad?
Daddy is what I prefer. So I started. Awesome. I started in radio in college. So I've been doing improv comedy professionally since I was 16 years old. And so I toured doing that stuff and went to school. And I was doing. I studied radio, TV, and theater. And so when I graduated, I immediately got a job from one of the big radio stations in New York City, Q104.3. There's so little money in radio that like their offer that what they were going to pay me, I couldn't even commute from New Jersey into New York and make money. So I was like, no, I'm good. But I took that and a friend that I met was like, hey man, I'll make a voiceover demo for you. Like I have a studio or whatever. And so I did that. I was still pursuing film and TV, not even thinking about the voiceover world, but then NY casting was a thing and NY casting and LA casting still exist. I hate them, but they still exist. and they're taking people's money when they shouldn't.
Ooh.
Details. Throw that. Anyway, I put my voiceover demo up there and 4Kids found me. And so I kept getting called into 4Kids. And again, I was auditioning and not landing stuff. And like, taking the train into New York City for these voiceover auditions where you would like go in the booth and you'd be in there for like 30 seconds, put your thing on tape and then leave. And I'm like, this is hell on earth. But then got Silver the Hedgehog, which broke my...
That was what you got first.
Yeah, that was my first one.
Wow.
And which was really, really awesome.
Can you explain 4Kids super quick for anybody who doesn't know?
A production company in New York City that had the rights to, I guess, all the American rights to all of the... So Pokemon, Yu-Gi-Oh!, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles...
Kid Muscle.
Backyardigans, right? Did they have Backyardigans or am I making that up?
I don't know about Backyardigans. Dinosaur King. God, there were so many.
Yeah, so many.
Crash Test Dummies. G.I. Joe.
I love Crash Test Dummies.
Sigma 6.
Yeah. G.I. Joe Sigma 6. I forgot they had that. Yep. And they were the most wonderful people. They were really, really great. Oddly, right after I landed the Silver gig and recorded that game, I then left for Los Angeles. I went pilot season 2007 to LA. I booked something. I went back home, got my stuff, moved across the country. And so like anything, I wasn't lucky enough to like get into all the other cartoons like Jason did because I was not there. And they were kind enough to let me record remotely. I was the only one who was doing it, recording remotely for all the games. Mm,
that's kind of insane.
Mm. Yeah.
And don't think I'm on my phone. I am pulling up a couple questions from the audience. Oh, yeah, so don't think I'm ignoring you. They're ready.
You're not Jason drifting off over there looking at games.
I know earlier in your career, you did like the Comedy Lab.
Yeah, so that Improv Jam Comedy Labs was where I started improvising. I started taking class. So it was a guy who his name was Mike O'Keefe, one of the funniest dudes I've ever met in my entire life. He and Wayne Brady and Jonathan Mangum, who's the co-host with Wayne Brady on Let's Make a Deal, and a bunch of some of the other guys from Who's Line, all were at the Sack Theater in Orlando and doing improv down there. And as half of them went to L.A., Mike went back home to New Jersey to deal with some family stuff and wound up like getting into the teaching game. So he was a substitute teacher in one of my classes, and I was messing around one day. And he was like, dude, if you think you're funny, come take classes with me. And he was putting together this improv show. And so at 16, I started performing for over like 100 to 200 kids every Thursday, Friday, and Saturday night. And before I got to LA, I performed in over 3,000 improv shows.
Jeez.
So like I had just so much experience under my belt and all that improv stuff that helped with all the voice stuff. Cause we were doing impressions, you know, we were singing songs. So it really lent itself to the voiceover.
Fun.
That's awesome.
Jason, what were you when you said you got distracted? I know you wanted to say it. What game were you saying?
I
spotted a certain game on the wall. What is it?
I saw the Metroid box and it just took me back for a second. You know, I don't know.
Well, I will say our audience loves video games, obviously. It's a lot. Our audience especially is a lot of Nintendo, Super Nintendo.
Okay. Yeah. So I have a great story.
So why don't you tell us a little bit about what people, there was literally a lot of comments from our audience saying, just what do they like as far as video games? What did you guys grow up with?
My first system, I think we had an Atari 2600, but it was sort of pre-cognition years. But I remember getting an NES for my birthday, 1987, I think it was. So it would have been November of 87. And it just, I just got goosebumps thinking about the feeling of having it hooked up to that giant wooden cabinet television in my living room and turning it on and just Mario Brothers and Duck Hunt coming together. And
yeah, it does like the little thing.
Yep.
And the TV makes like the pop when you turn it on. Yeah. Kind of the static pops out.
Oh, I used to run my fingers on that.
Yeah.
But that just started it all for me. And I probably had a problem at 10 years old because it's all I wanted to do was play Nintendo games. And I remember distinctly in third grade when Super Mario Brothers 3 was just about to be released. And I had the phone book open and I was calling every single toy store seeing if I could, at the time, pre-order it. I mean, I didn't think about it that way, but I was like, can you save me a copy if you have it? Nobody had it. And there was a girl in my class named Heather. And she, for I think it was a show and tell thing, or she just wanted to talk about it. She won a copy of the game before it was released.
Wow.
And I'm 10-year-old or 9-year-old Jason's just sitting there thinking, if I start dating her, maybe we can I would have a fantasy of us like having a romantic dinner and looking into each other's eyes, and then like television commercial style, we both turn towards the camera with Nintendo controllers.
Oh, dude! Right?
But then when I finally got that game, that was it. I mean, it was just hours. I remember
great
one day
commercial idea too.
two 9-year-olds two dorks. But when I finally got that game, that's all I played.
I think it's really cool that you said you got goosebumps, because I'm always such a big believer of how powerful nostalgia is. I got to meet, even a while back when our show almost got picked up, we got to meet with Morgan Freeman, and he was talking with us about, you know, the possibility of the show getting picked up, this and that. And he was like, I don't know if I have nostalgia necessarily. And I knew in my head, I'm like, if I just start talking about some stuff, something's going to catch him.
Yeah.
And I started talking about different things, and I mentioned Donkey Kong. And before I knew it, dude, I could see nostalgia in his brain starting to turn without him realizing it. Yeah. And he started telling me stories. Oh, and I used to pop in quarters and this and that. And in my head, I was sitting back. I'm like, I just got Morgan Freeman to unlock his nostalgia.
It's amazing, dude.
Yeah. And I was like, what a cool thing.
I only imagine him in his voice only, too.
That's how he talks.
He's like the narrator of my brain.
He is the narrator. What about you, Pete? What's your favorite game of all time, too? I want to know.
Ooh, favorite game of all time is such a hard question. I had Atari 26. I'm older. Atari 2600 was my first thing, but we were always a little late to the game. My parents weren't, they didn't have a lot of money, nor were they hip. And so it took forever to get a computer, blah, blah, blah. Yep. But we got an Atari 2600 with 65 games from a garage sale,
you know.
And then that was in the basement hooked up to that big cabinet television.
Score.
And then when we finally got Nintendo, only my sister and I would play it. And so it was hooked up to a 20 inch, maybe 17 inch black and white TV.
Yep.
Yes.
So I first played Super Mario Brothers in black and white. I didn't know what it looked like in color until I went to a friend's house.
they make this in color.
And then when Tetris came out, and my parents were like, whoa, Tetris is cool. Let's put it on the color TV.
Oh,
and then they stole the Nintendo, essentially. We kept playing it because they wanted to play Tetris. Favorite game of all time is almost impossible for me.
I know it's hard to pick, but I always just pick what's that game? If someone gave you a modded console with every game on it, what would be the one you'd be like, oh, hey, do you have this?
Old school or
could
be any. In general?
You could be even Xbox 60, how you kind of.
Yeah, because I got way into Call of Duty, and we were talking about this earlier. Yeah. I got way into Call of Duty when my brother was serving overseas. Mm. I bought an Xbox 360 because they couldn't talk on the phone, but they had Xboxes.
Yeah.
And so I could talk to my brother in Iraq and Afghanistan on the computer. And so I got super into Call of Duty. Man. And then when I moved out to LA, I had roommates that also loved Call of Duty. And so we would just play nonstop from, the first one, Call of Duty Modern Warfare 2, I think is probably the one.
I was
really
just as addicted
me.
To the point where this USA in the brackets, that's my clan tag.
So no, I feel it's very relatable, because I feel a lot of us had that's how we communicate with our friends.
Wow. Yeah. And it's interesting. I know in the retro gaming world, too, there was a period where Call of Duty kind of became like the thing to make fun of. Like, oh, of course, another Call of Duty. But there was a golden time of that period that you're saying where Call of Duty was like by far and large the best first person shooter experience 100%. In the market, 100%. No matter what.
Hey, the new one's good, too.
Yeah, you did some voices in it, correct?
I did. I haven't played any of them, though. I was out of gaming at by that point. Yeah.
Fake voice.
I know, right?
No, he plays this
I'll
one.
I'll tell you, though.
Call of Duty, rehire.
That was a great game to work on, though. That was a fantastic, really great experience. Although I do have a follow-up because something Pete said made me think of something. What if someone could mod me a game or whatever, and it has one game on it. There is one game. It's for the NES. And I want to see how good you guys are. I'm just going to sing the opening theme song, and if you guys can guess it, okay?
Okay.
And then it'll go... Bloop.
Sounds like a black box title to me.
Like a balloon fight?
No, close, though.
Pinball?
No, close.
Ice Climber?
No.
That's a black box title, I feel like, because it's so generic, it sounds like.
Is it really?
I'm a huge NES music guy.
I've only been playing with it a little bit because he's given me like files with music on it. And oh, okay. So.
I'm normally, we've done NES music trivias, and I'm like the king reign of it, so I want to know now.
If I said it was in space and you shot things, would that...
Invaders?
Space? No. There's just so many. That's you just NES. Have to tell
them. Galaga.
Oh, see, Galaga? I'm not a big Galaga guy, but that's what you would go to?
It's one of my it's my top three. Maybe it's my favorite of all time.
Wow. Mega Man 2?
Well, Mega Man 2 is, I mean, right up there. But my dad and I used to play Galaga
there
together, and it was just such a like probably the only video game bonding experience I ever had with my dad was playing Galaga.
Awesome.
And so it was just I loved Galaga.
And that's how powerful nostalgia is, because sometimes it's not even the game that's that great. It's those memories of the game that 100%. Are like so like I know me and you were talking about Super Spike V-Ball earlier. Yeah. And I'm like, I love when people talk about that because not everyone's hyped on it.
It's so great. It's okay. Such a good game.
I don't want to miss it or the audience will kill us. Okay, let me get one audience question out of the way. This is from Irish Boy 6633.
He's an Irish boy.
Do you feel that you are the definitive voice for your character, Sonic and Silver?
No. I mean, here's what I really have thought about this. Does that work? All those words? I feel like I was the last cartoon sounding Sonic, because my Sonic sounded like this. And of course, he started like this. In Sonic X, he sounded like this. But then by the time we finished with the video games, he was cooler. And I feel like everybody who has come after me is more, oh, it's just their regular voice. Mm. Like, I feel like Sonic has taken on more of a human aspect voice-wise now than... when we were...
I get that totally, but I guess it's just an age thing, right? Like, for me, I picture more the goofy kitty sounding like you're doing. For me, just because that's what I grew up in that age range.
And that is the vast majority of people that we're meeting at conventions are saying, you're the voice that I most identify with because that's who I grew up with.
And that's all it's going to be reality for anything in the world. What about you, Pete?
I will humbly say absolutely.
I would say you have to.
Because I created the voice and did the like anything that actually had a Silver storyline, I was the voice. And so, you know, other than making, I have nothing against the other guys that like, I think two other guys have voiced him in like subsequent games. I haven't played those games and I know there's no storyline for them. So they're kind of just like saying catchphrases and or making noises or whatever, and good on them. I hope they do and make tons of money doing it.
But. Speaking of that, Omi's Pokeverse says, question for Silver.
Yeah.
What's the better catchphrase? It's no use or Tails has just lost it?
Ooh, well, it's got to be, it's no use, only because...
Because that's what happens every time he does that in a crowd.
He said the thing because it's a meme.
Yeah.
Like the second... Because people are like, hey, I'm so sorry to ask you this. Like,
yeah, conventions. For the millionth
time. But like, will you say it? And I was like, dude, happily. Like, I have something that became a meme and is so revered within the Sonic culture. Why am I not going to love that?
Yeah.
My son has never played a Sonic video game, but he just asked Pete to do that catchphrase 17 times today.
I heard him at the swap meet. It reminds me of, I've been voice actors, it's very similar to, there's a Simpsons episode where Bart says, you know, there's a lot of different catchphrases and there's this one one famous line from Milhouse where Bart gets known to say a line a lot, and he says it all the time. And everywhere he goes, and I feel like you guys might get stuck in this sometime, everyone's just looking at him in the room, and they're like, say the line, Bart, say the line.
I didn't do it.
Yeah, I didn't do it. And then it became a rap song and all that stuff as well. Let me get a couple more. They'll be kind of rapid fire. I just want to make sure that our audience gets, you know, they get heard. From The Shiny War Turtle, before you guys voiced the characters.
The Shiny War Turtle.
Before you guys voiced your characters, did you have any idea who the characters were?
Of course.
You for sure.
I just got a vague description. As a matter of fact, when I was voicing my character, I still didn't know what the hell I was talking about in that first game. When they were like, you know, his first line was, I finally found him, the Iblis Trigger. And I was like, that sounds so cool. What's an Iblis Trigger? Like, I had no idea what I was saying.
I like that. I have to read one more. Let's see. What is, okay. I have to get it in for the audience.
Fine, man.
What will we say here? Someone said something about, it's a question for Sonic. From Omni's Pokeverse again. Whoops. Do you prefer Ryan Drummond or Roger Craig Smith? Or do you not want to answer?
I don't have a preference. I mean, I've only met Ryan. I've heard Roger's great. I know Roger's a great actor.
You're on a road trip from the East Coast to the West Coast.
There you go. Put it in perspective.
Who's sitting next to you? Roger
who's your
Ryan.
Co-pilot?
Yeah. I'm going to go Ryan because I just feel like he's more into tech.
That's messed up, dude. I can't believe you picked somebody.
I have no idea. Who can read a Thompson guide? Because we're not GPS in this show.
I love those questions.
What is it? Thomas's guide.
It reminds me of those questions my brothers and I used to ask each other. Like, all right, dude, if you had to kill someone, like, let's just say, like, you had to kill mom or dad. Just pick. And they're like, dude, I'm not going to answer. Just pick. And then they pick. You're like, dude, why would you say that?
Would you rather kill someone or be killed? That's the
kill someone.
Kill someone, easy. Right?
What do you want? We're not making it out of this shit, dude. I gave him an idea.
Fast answers.
That's a new question for everyone who gets on the podcast. Where are you at, Curtis? You're the time manager.
Yes. What is like one of your guys' like you guys can choose? It could be either voice acting or production and stuff like that. What was one of your favorite projects to work on?
Oh my God. I mean, that's like such a hard. You go ahead.
I have one because I was so lucky to be on this. So I was on. If you guys are NFL football fans, which, you know, the crossover between video games and football fans is
not the
huge.
Biggest.
Yeah. But there was something before NFL games for a couple of years called Riggle's Picks, and it was Rob Riggle doing his football picks. Yep. And it was sketch comedy stuff, and there were always celebrity guests, and I was part of the comedy team, which was just such a blessing, and Rob is like the best, and the writers wrote specifically for myself and for my wife, and so it was really, really cool to be on there. But my first day on set, we're on set and I'm working with, you know, with some great people, like Paul Scheer and like just really great comedy guys, and my scenes with Rob. And then they're like, the director's like, all right, ladies and gentlemen, it's her 98th birthday, Betty White. And wow. Betty White walks onto the set, and I was like, who's here? And it was crazy. The funniest thing. So she walked onto set, and there was a sketch where like, there's a stormtrooper in it, right? So know that there's like a couple of celebrities and a bunch of actors and a stormtrooper. And she walked in. It was, ladies and gentlemen, Betty White, and everyone's clapping. And she goes, oh, I know you. I know you. And then pointed at the stormtrooper and went, I did you. Just right. It was her 98th birthday.
Wow.
And she was like right on it.
On it.
Yeah, it was so great.
Wow, that is awesome. That I love to hear that.
Yeah.
I love that. Dang. Are you going to move it on to the next one?
I was waiting for him to answer this project.
I mean, that's
he doesn't like to answer.
I know. No, I do.
If you had to choose. You in the booth
politician
with me.
Answer.
The one time I was in the booth with Pete was
magic. Because he looked at me and said, I did you.
And a young
So I did a commercial. This must have been like 28 years old, 27, something like that. It was for a new medication. It never made it to air.
I wasn't expecting this to be your answer.
Yeah, no. Right. It was on camera. It was on camera, and it was just me and this girl, and it was supposed to be in the vein of a soap opera, like melodramatic. And we're, you know, we shot on a soundstage, but they made it look like, sorry, we're like in a jungle somewhere. And, you know, she's like, I don't know what to do, Chet. We're going to die out here. You know, I'm like, we have one more match, Anna, and it's our last hope. And then I strike it, and then she sneezes, and the match goes out, and it's for allergies. But they let us riff on. They let us do just a bunch of whatever we wanted to do,
cool.
Like improv wise. And I just remember over and over, just making the crew bust out laughing with these ideas. And a bunch of them I'd written on a napkin, and the director referred to it as the napkin of genius. I was just like, oh, and they're like, we're going to do tons of commercials. This is going to be great. It's going to be a series of these. And then it just got axed because probably people died taking this medication or something.
Dang.
Like they, you know, they got the sniffles and then they're in a coffin. So that was such a great experience that didn't pan out. So, you know, if that had, I think that would have been.
Did Betty White play the girl?
She was there sneezing a lot.
Yeah.
Because she had done so many stormtroopers that, you know.
All right. So I know Riff wanted to do this one. It's ranking your guys' favorite voice actors.
Yeah,
of
we kinda,
all time.
I kind of wanted to throw. So here's a simple way to put it. It's not necessarily ranking, but yes.
Yeah, I know.
I want to kind of. There's so many powerful voices that you hear within cinema that you feel like they have such an impact on your life and as that character. I have some of my favorites, so I know Curtis is just going to kind of throw some out. I'll throw some out too. And we just kind of rank them. Like, where do they stand as the voice?
These
a great
are probably
voice
their friends for sure.
They
some
could
of
be
them.
Your voice. Could be your friends.
Mel Blanc. Oh.
The easiest easiest one of all. Legendary.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, mine was John DiMaggio.
So,
Bender.
Bender. And the voice of Marcus Fenix.
Oh, he's the voice of Marcus Fenix?
Yeah.
Which is Gears of War, if you guys...
It's one of my favorite games of all time. And I live, breathe, and die Gears of War.
So if I have to give an honest ranking, it's not going to be that high because...
Now, you don't need to rank my voice actor.
I'm shooting him down. I'm not the biggest Futurama guy, even though I like it.
Really?
Yeah. Wow, that's surprising because you're a Simpsons fan.
I'm a huge
So you're a Matt Groening fan, but then don't love Futurama.
But Bender is like one of like... has a cult following.
Absolutely. Yeah, he's great.
Yeah, so how about you?
I'm going to throw out a voice, and I'd love everyone's ranking on it. And again, I don't necessarily even know who the actors, voice actors are, but I just want to talk about the impact of the voice.
Yeah.
For me, we talked about the swap meet, Winnie the Pooh.
Oh, that's Jim Cummings.
Jim Cummings.
That's one of the voices to me where when I hear it, it's like it immediately, I almost get like emotional when I hear it.
Yeah.
Because it's such a sweet, soothing, comforting voice. I always feel like it's so interesting, no matter what situation Winnie the Pooh is in, that it never makes you feel as a kid, like even if it's a blustery day, like I'm not worried, right? I'm not actually worried about what's happening. I feel like even if something's going on, Winnie the Pooh is right there soothing me along with the journey that I'm on.
Right.
So
right.
For me, that's like one of my favorite voices.
Yeah, I'm going to take a cop out of my book. I mean, just because they're here, Pete Capella and John
Griffith.
John Griffith. My uncle didn't start out in voiceover.
John. That's cool.
Yeah. Jason I want to know, what do you guys think about the Winnie the Pooh voice? You can tell me if you think it sucks.
I'm not a fan, but legendary.
I grew up watching Winnie the Pooh. I was never a huge fan of it, though, you know.
Got it.
And,
way to crap my childhood.
I know, sorry.
I had Eeyore vibes, so I didn't really, you know what I mean?
I think the voice is great, and I think for the reason you just said is like that's a cartoon that's meant to soothe kids.
I
think it very much does its job for sure.
Have you guys ever tried to like almost enact other voice roles?
100%.
Yeah.
Well, that's such a big part of voiceover as it is because number one, you're always given celebrity references. Mm. We want to sound like this, this, this. So even if I do a commercial audition and they give me Donald Glover or something, like I'll do a take where I absolutely try to sound like Donald Glover just because that's what you know, and you never know what's going to come out of that because you could go, oh, I could take this part of it. I'm not doing an imitation anymore. I'm just kind of tweaking my performance to sound more in that ballpark. But then when I auditioned for Sonic, they played clips of Ryan Drummond for me, although I didn't know who Ryan was at the time. And they said, we don't want you to copy this, but this is
your inspiration. Kind of. From it.
And it's funny because then I hear Ryan do his Sonic and I'm like, that sounds like such a, and I don't mean this as a diss, but like primitive version of where I started, you know, and then it evolved from there.
I feel, evolution of your own like characteristics into it.
Yeah. And the fact that I grew up imitating everyone that had a distinct voice in my family or friends of my family, like it was such a, it just landed on my ear in a certain way that I could recreate it and then get a reaction from it. It's huge.
Now, how like true is this that you have to kind of pull from your own truth to really become a character? Cause I know you pretty much had to create your own voice.
So yeah, when people, I'm going to go back to something Jason said earlier.
Yeah.
He said he doesn't know what to tell people when they ask, how do you become a voice actor? And I always have one answer, which is take acting lessons. Because you are, voice acting is really hard. Everyone can make a funny voice. We've all been like, same thing. I grew up before there were like home video cameras. So I only had a voice recorder, recording onto cassette. So that's what you'd grow up doing. But in order to bring something to life, and if you put the camera on me, I can do that easily. I can do it with just my eyes or just physical motions. But with voice acting, it's just your voice. So you're emoting in all the ways with just the voice. And I think that takes a really good actor than it does a silly voice. Anybody can make a silly voice.
Yeah.
But it's really about bringing a character to life fully with just your voice.
Ask him to do It's No Use with just his eyes.
With who?
With just his eyes. Can we get a close-up on this?
I don't think they zoom in.
Yeah, I'd have to go manually, dude. Yeah, but.
Sorry, audio listeners. I have a question. Is there someone in your mind or a specific character or role that you feel like is one of the most impactful, like that is one of the best voice acting roles you've ever seen portrayed within cinema, within video games, or what? When you hear it, you're like I have one that I could say is like one of my defining childhood voice acting roles, which I'll say after.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
Do you guys have one?
The short answer is, yes and no. But there was a series of video games that my cousin and I played for the PC called Under a Killing Moon. And what was the other one? Pandora's Directive. But it followed this. They were live action. And it followed this detective named Tex Murphy. Hmm. And everything, you could click on everything in Tex.
I remember that game. Yeah.
And Tex Murphy would explain, that's a Victrola from blah, 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 blah. And don't put your finger too close to it because it might, like that sort of thing. And every time I think of that, it brings me right back to a time when I was thinking to myself, that would be the most cool, like that would be the coolest thing to be able to be Tex Murphy, to like work on, it was right at the peak when I was just becoming interested in acting too. And that was like, how do I get into something like that? Mm. So every time when I was recording my very first video games, Shadow the Hedgehog, and the script was like this,
got it,
this thick, and it was all dialogue and so many choices. That's really what was playing in my head the entire time. Like, oh man, someone's going to hear my voice coming out of their speakers. Like I heard Tex Murphy's voice out of my cousin's PC speakers,
Oh, it's not even showing up.
So Tex Murphy. Okay. I wasn't expecting that.
Right.
Yeah. What about you?
Mine is a lot more, mainstream. Yeah. Like anybody else has heard of it.
I like it.
I think this is
that's him.
It was Chris Jones. Yeah.
Mine is definitely cool. Jim Henson. So,
oh yeah,
the Muppet movie was the first movie I ever saw in the movie theater. I was obsessed with the Muppets. Anything Jim Henson, Labyrinth is top three movies for me ever.
I love Labyrinth.
It's literally.
I'm a huge puppeteer and animatronic fan.
Okay, yeah. So, and specifically, Kermit just gets me. Not Kim Henson, Jim Henson.
Dude,
what are you typing in over
there? I'm so far away from the screen.
Yeah. Rainbow Connection. One of my favorite songs of all time.
I play it on guitar and or sing it at karaoke as Kermit all the time. So doing Kermit's voice is like my dream job.
Do you have a pretty good Kermit?
I have a pretty good Kermit.
I love that.
Oh, this is Kermit the Frog here. And the more I practice it, the closer it gets. I just love, and I love everything Jim Henson did. He was just like a kind human being trying to spread love. I auditioned for the newer Muppet Babies cartoon at one point.
Oh, dude,
and
I love Muppet Babies.
Anything, just let me, I'll make fart noises the whole time. I don't care. Just let me be on this show. I just want to be a part of Jim Henson's universe.
Did you have a favorite character on the Muppets?
At the time, it was probably Robin, Kermit's nephew, because I was a little bit younger and that I thought that was really cool. But they're all great. Zoot was my other favorite character who barely said anything, but he's the saxophone player in the band.
Yeah, yeah.
I just love everything. The whole show is so genius and cool. And then again, then you go to Labyrinth and like
unreal.
It's just
a visual
perfection,
wonder.
Yeah, it's absolutely amazing. And like flopped in the movie theater.
Mm. Yeah, like, it has a very cult following.
Yes, it blew up after that. But like, I know that movie inside and out.
Yeah, same.
It's the best.
Am I crazy? Beaker was on Muppets.
I was just
right?
about to say Beaker.
Beaker
yeah.
is like literally.
Yeah,
like,
yeah. yeah. And Bunsen.
Bunsen yeah. and yeah, Beaker. They were great.
One of my favorites, and it's interesting, and I didn't even put this together until you just said it. You said the Muppets, one of them was your first movie you ever saw
mm-hmm.
in theaters. One of the first movie I ever saw in theaters with my dad was The Lion King.
Ooh, yeah.
And to this day, one of my favorite voices, and I know he was a mainstream actor, especially in Home Improvement, Jonathan Taylor Thomas's
yeah.
voice in there is such a like a powerful voice for me. Again, it's one mm-hmm. of those things where I can hear it and I get emotional.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's because yeah. I remember my mom left. She went to a funeral because my grandpa died. But I went to the movies with my dad and saw that movie. And I think that's why there's like such an emotional attachment.
I'm sure
attachment
your dad did not know that Mufasa died in the movie.
Probably
just
not.
Like, oh, no.
That and obviously one of the other big ones is obviously the legendary Robin yeah. Williams as
oh,
the genie.
Oh, he's just.
The genie is just the stupidest best performance, stupidly good.
You couldn't recreate it.
I've been on an improv stage with Robin Williams and that was just the most amazing thing.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah he was.
In the most insane genius ever.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He was a gamer too.
I bet.
Yeah, no, I think that
he named his daughter Zelda.
Yeah. And oh, right. I think it was for those reasons.
Yeah. Right. Cool.
Wow.
Yeah, there's a lot
of
couple. Yeah,
sorry, yeah. I'm just trying to think of the other ones. It's interesting how the early day Disney movies, there's so many. There he is, Jonathan. Is the audience going to be able to see that?
If my wife could have had her way, that would be my wife's husband right now.
My wife, too.
You look kind of... You could pass for a modern day Jonathan Taylor
My
Thomas.
Wife, too. Oh, she really? Always talks about it. And no then my way. Daughter recently discovered it, who's now 11 or 12. And she was just like, oh, my daddy, that guy's cute.
There was a time when we were showing our sons Jungle to Jungle. Every week, like that was their movie. Now it's Encino Man and Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure.
Encino Man.
Oh, that's a good one. Love it. Yeah. Love it.
I'm trying to think what other Disney characters stick out to me as some of the bigger strongholds.
I just watched James Earl Thomas. No,
James Earl Jones. You mean?
Hey, dude, I'm so stroking out today.
You okay?
I'm so stroking out today.
Well, you were hanging out with John Griffith all morning, so.
Johnny G.
I was just watching this amazing video of them directing the woman who was singing. Part of their world.
Yes.
A part of your world,
yes.
whatever the hell
yes.
the actual title is. Part of that world, partial world.
Sure.
I gave it to him.
and they were directing her on, like she's in the booth singing the song. And they're like, that's beautiful. That's amazing. But like, okay, now you're like, but you're in a private, you're talking to yourself. You're in a, and like the way they changed, how she sang the song and to watch her do that and then make this song go from something big and Broadway-esque to like small and personal. It was just the coolest thing. It was really, really cool.
That was a reminder of a question I had. How hard is it for you guys to be able to just do it solo by yourself rather than bouncing off other people in the booth or at least across from you?
Now it's easy. Mm-hmm. Not that it was hard before, but you really have to use your imagination to hear the other person. And of course your instinct could be wrong, but 9 times out of 10, if that's the case, they're going to have you come and re-record it anyway. But it's easier now, especially because what we do as voiceover actors is give lots of options. And that's something that comes instinctually now, where if I'm recording a line, I'm doing this new documentary right now for the History Channel where we go line by line and I will just throw out 5 different ideas for each line as they come to me. It's not like premeditated. It's like my brain's muscle has developed in such a way that I heard what I just did and then I can give a variation on that and a variation on that. But really it's pretty, you know,
I do it right the first time every time.
Yeah. Every time.
Nice.
That's what they call
nice.
It
waxed.
One take, Johnny.
We're both Johnny. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I miss the days of being,
I love it.
I miss the days of, especially with auditions. I miss the days of being going to a booth with a director
so
and having them be like, yeah, you nailed it. But like, what if we
so much
and like, cause that really, you know, you are now recording your auditions and sending them out into the ether and you don't even know if people are listening to them. I mean, they say they are, yeah. and I assume they are, but like, it really, they could be like, oh, what, John Griffin? I know him. And just click on his and be like, yeah, this is the guy, you know?
So, right. To add to that, that's happened to me before.
Don't worry, this is normal with Curtis not to know.
Half the time I'm stroking, man. Yeah. So we already know.
Not to cut you off, but that I want to add to that, that I've been in a situation where they said, yeah, you know, as soon as we heard your audition, we stopped listening to all the other auditions because you were the voice. And I was like, that's awesome. But at the same time, I was like, oh no, that's probably happened to me so many times where I was number 43, but number 22 was the one they stopped listening at, you know?
Interesting.
Yeah. Because they just don't have time. You know, if they're going to find what they like, it's like, we love this. We don't have to go and try to best that.
And unfortunately, they're bringing in too many people, in my opinion, now. So, like, now that everything's on the internet, they've, like, expanded that to 10 times of what they used to bring in.
Yeah.
So there's a couple up here. The audience won't be able to see it.
Yeah.
Is there any names up here that stand? Oh, for me, Tom Kenny. I'm a huge SpongeBob guy.
Yeah,
when my wife was in labor, I think we watched a 36-hour marathon of SpongeBob.
There's a lot I got wrong.
Also, Dan Castellaneta.
Of course.
Seth MacFarlane, one of my favorite.
Dude, Seth directed me in an episode of Orville. I mean, I had one scene, but I did it, and I heard there was a co-director, and the co-director said, that was good. It was just a close-up on me. And then Seth said, that was damn good. And I was like, well, there we go. That's all I needed. You know, get me out of this 3 hours of makeup now. I can go home.
What you should have said was, you should hear my voiceover work.
Yeah, exactly.
I love Kevin Michael Richardson is a good friend of mine. He's a great dude. He does a million. He's in everything. He's the bartender, with the afro in Family Guy. The guy who took over the clam. He's in everything.
But what about Nancy Cartwright up there? Is a good one for me too.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, anybody Simpsons is great.
Anybody. And aren't they doing like isn't like Dan and those guys doing like 15, 20 voices of those characters?
Yeah. Because they all originally there was like probably six cast members, you know?
And they're just going on all those, man.
Have you worked with the majority up here, or are they pretty much doing their own thing?
These
actors. I know a lot of them are not here today.
We've
been
in projects with some of these people, but again, you don't work with them, you know.
You ever worked with Mark Hamill?
God, I wish. I played Darth Vader, and everyone knows that, like in real life.
No, although I did a project with Christopher Lloyd. Not at the same time, but at the same project.
And that's a good one.
He was supposedly like, I was talking to Joe Vegas, directed or recorded him, and he just said he was the coolest guy ever. And he needed, there had to be like a fishbowl full of Reese's Pieces for him in the booth.
Wow.
Like that was the one thing. That
sounds so good right now.
That sounds so counterintuitive to your voice.
There was one voice that I had to look up, which was Buzz Lightyear. The first one was Patrick Warburton.
He was the first Buzz Lightyear?
Joe Swanson, and then he was
Buzz Lightyear
is
Tim Allen, yeah.
Was it really?
Yeah.
Am I crazy?
You poor guy today.
Dude, I am stroking.
Guys, kids these days.
I think you meant John Warburton.
Tim Allen's name before he went to jail.
I'm going to break this laptop.
John, he's going to get roasted for thinking that Buzz Lightyear was not Tim Allen.
Come on, dude. That's Tom Hanks and Tim Allen.
Yeah. How about, what was it?
He just wants me to move on out of the question. I will say Mark Hamill's Joker, though, in Batman the Animated is
the best. Nothing better.
When we say defining, that's my defining
Joker.
That's my defining Joker.
I think a couple of those people were at Pensacon with us. I think Billy West was there.
Billy West was not there.
He wasn't?
No, I don't think so.
Was Tom Kenny there?
Tom Kenny was no, he wasn't there either.
Rob Paulson was there.
Yes.
That's so funny.
Don LaFontaine was not there.
No, he's dead.
Definitely not there.
Phil Lamar was there.
Yeah, I remember.
Yep.
Do you guys play Sonic games?
I just did this morning.
I was waiting on it.
I played 06 for a while.
Okay, so what's your thought on that? Because there was for a while that game was like, oh my gosh, it's so bad. Yeah, and now everyone's like, it's a cult following.
I didn't have the glitchiness in the game, to be fair, because I know certain games did. I loved what they did with Silver's character specifically. Like, I liked that there was, now there's other powers in this game instead of just running fast. So I love that you got to do all the things with all the different characters. And I thought the storyline was really cool. It was a little weird that it was implied that maybe Sonic and the princess had a little physical thing.
Yeah, that was kind of fun.
What do you mean implied?
He knows,
That's gnarly.
You know, it's so funny, though, because when we were recording and when these games first came out, it seemed like anybody who talked about it with me online, or I would get MySpace messages at the time of just, oh, that sucked, and you suck, and you should definitely give the role back to
Tom message
so-and-so. Tom always, we were back and forth. I'm like,
dude. He's my number one.
I tried
and
to,
only.
I'm glad you got Tom's name right, dude.
Didn't Tom play Buzz Lightyear?
Yeah, he's the original.
Tom Allen.
Tom Allen.
So for the longest time, I thought, I guess these games just suck. Mm. But this is the most surprising and I think gratifying thing about doing these personal appearances now, mm-hmm. is we're meeting everybody who was 6-7 years old at the time, who's now in their late 20s, early 30s. Yeah. They're like, oh no, we love this game because this is what we grew up with. But yep. at the time, those weren't the 30-year-olds messaging me on ding, MySpace ding. Saying, go to hell and get...
The comment section at the time, that's what it was.
Yeah, yeah. And so...
That's interesting you say that. I didn't think about that. That's such a true statement that when you're a kid, you're not like, how's the voice acting?
Right.
Right? That's nothing. Right? Right. Resident Evil is known to have some of the funniest, goofiest lines, the way they're delivered. But nobody thought about that when you're a kid.
Right. Yeah.
You're playing.
Yeah.
It's when you get older, you're like, oh my gosh, that was delivered so weird. And they played the cues weird and the timing weird.
Yeah.
But now it's like such an icon that anyone that grew up with it like me was like, no, I loved that.
Those games, when they started putting storylines in them, it really like affected people.
Yes.
And so like, you know, we were at Pensacon recently, and which is a big convention in Pensacola, Florida. And the night before, our agent and I went to go play poker at a poker room. And we were taking an Uber back from the poker room. And there was this dude who was our Uber driver. And he's like, he was a linebacker of a man, this gigantic dude with dreadlocks. And he's like, what are you two doing in Pensacola? Like, you clearly don't, you're not from here. And I wasn't going to say anything, but our agent has no filter, as you well know. And was just like, oh, yeah, I'm an agent, and this is one of my voice actors.
Oh, it was him.
No, it was Jack.
The man who we know. Okay.
The man. And so he was like, yeah, so this is one of my voice actors from the Sonic games. And I watched him, like, he's, you know, holding the steering wheel, and his, like, just hands just, like, tightened. And he goes, which one? Who did you voice? And I was like, oh, Silver the Hedgehog. And he started trembling. And I'm telling you, this is a gigantic man. And it winds up like he messaged me. We talked for a little while and took pictures together or whatever. But he messaged me the next day on Instagram. And was just like, hey, man, my family abandoned me when I was a kid. And your character got me through. And it's one of those things where it's just like, you don't realize the work that you're doing is taken in by people and it affects them in the way that they want it to affect them. And so like, we're doing this, like, you know, I was having this conversation with my wife yesterday, because we were talking about acting, we're both actors. And, we're talking about like how that's what acting's about. You just want to affect somebody. And like, you just never know what people are going to connect to.
And that guy's story, that's not that only story. It's right? just one of the ones you're hearing.
We've heard it a bunch. Yeah. Like, we have people come up to our booths and they're crying and they're like, Jason, what are you staring at? And he's like, oh, I don't know. There's games on the other wall.
Look at RC Pro-Am.
I have never seen someone in the podcast more mesmerized by my NES game.
I'm like choked up over the story. And I just
Yeah. And Jason's like, I'm like, is that Rygar?
You know, at least your love for games is real. Oh,
you know. I'm sorry. You know, I'm listening, but this is what I do. This is why I get in trouble with my wife, because I will be looking this way, but I'm hearing everything and picturing it all, but my eyes want to, you know, frolic.
Oh, yeah? You were listening? What was the guy's name that he was talking to?
Oh, he never said it, but okay, he's a good. Big guy.
Correct. There
he's
you go.
A big guy. He was listening. And his hands were on the steering wheel, and he began to tremble, and he said, get out of my car.
I'm just called building a story, Jason, you know?
Yeah, those things are just crazy because, like you said, you heard it from, you know, that man and you got to hear that story, but there's thousands and thousands of more of those stories, but you're just not getting to hear them all.
Totally. Yeah, totally.
You're affecting people's life.
Again, and I was just talking, I think, to you guys about this earlier. This is one of the most surprising things about meeting fans is the way that you've impacted their lives in such a way that wasn't even a possibility in my mind that it was that anything like that had happened. And people have told me your Sonic kept me from committing suicide, or I had a horrible living situation and this was my escape and this is what made me feel safe. And it's hard to even respond to that except humbly to say thank you, and I'm so glad you're here, and I'm so glad you didn't do anything to yourself or to hurt yourself or whatever. But at the same time, it's just so always so disarming to hear that, because it's how do you wrap your mind around something like that? Mm. And when someone wants to tell you that and you mean so much to them, you know, it really makes this all worth it on a whole new level.
Yeah.
You know, aside from the millions and millions of dollars that we've been paid, yeah. The hundreds of millions of dollars.
Okay.
I feel like,
okay, wait, I'm going to ask this and I won't ask in detail. Don't worry.
Okay.
Does it pay you well? Sonic. Silver.
No.
Did it?
No.
Did? No.
No, not at
these,
all.
So when we recorded these games, they were non-union games.
Yeah.
So no residuals. You know, so Sega made billions. I think if when all is said and done with my recordings of like 8 games, I'm lucky if I made 10 grand total, if that.
Really? I will say that. Yeah.
Ben just verbally dropped his jaw, literally. Dude,
yeah.
I'm sorry I didn't buy your guys lunch.
I bought Pete's.
That's right.
Actually, no, I think it was John. But
yeah.
Things have gotten better. But back then, I will say, when I was recording it, and this is so funny because I was working at a pizzeria. I was working at Barnes & Noble. I was working as an usher at sitcoms in New York, where like Whoopi Goldberg sitcom, where I would give people pizza and water and then bring them to the bathroom where they could empty themselves. So making $10 an hour. So at that time, recording, you know, I think it was just a couple $100 an hour. Really, to record, it was...
I think that was exactly what it was. It was $200 an hour, I think.
It was like a windfall for me.
And how long you were recording?
It all depended. Some days I would go in for 10 hours straight because I'd be working on 5 different shows, 2 hours per show. But in the beginning, I distinctly remember because I would walk from my Times Square apartment to the studio on 23rd Street. It was like a mile and a half walk for me. And I would pass a place called Bravo Pizza, and they always had this most delicious pizza in the window and these chicken parm sandwiches that I could never afford. And I would be thinking during my session, I could have 5 chicken parms if I wanted tonight. Every session, wow. I'd be thinking, man, I could get 600 bags of jalapeno chips.
Was that when you were recording Sonic?
When I was recording Sonic.
I love jalapeno chips.
What was going through my mind. If anybody wants to know, in the booth, I was thinking about chips and chicken parm sandwiches because I felt like I'd hit the lotto.
Do you actually like chili dogs? In real life?
No.
Oh.
No, okay. I don't.
You're vegetarian.
I'm well vegetarian, but
a vegan chili dog is really good.
Do you eat tofu?
I do. Yeah.
You like it?
I do.
Wait, I heard you guys eat a certain way, right?
They're vegans.
We do.
Well, he eats with his mouth open and I eat with my eyes closed.
That's the best response you could have.
I'd be eating with my mouth open too if I was vegan.
I am not that crazy, but I definitely got it wrong. He wasn't the first, but he definitely played one of the voice roles.
Oh, you were looking
That's
at Buzz Lightyear.
That's what happened
the
whole time as you were trying to justify.
So for the audience, you can't see that.
Dude, I am so dumb. I have to prove it.
Curtis looked up Buzz Lightyear Star Command, the TV animated show, to see because...
That's what I grew up with. That's
he was so embarrassed that he got the role wrong.
I'm so dumb.
Dave's World. Fun. Dude, you hacked into the system and put his name in, right?
It's just a Google spreadsheet.
You guys were like, why wasn't he paying attention? He just like totally was typing over there.
Man, I will say too, like, I'm just super thankful too, because I was thinking about it in the car after we were filming. We filmed for our main channel before they were at the swap meet with us. If you didn't get a chance to check that out, whenever it goes out, probably a month from whenever. But I was just driving and I'm like, man, what a cool like world we're in where like I get to like go to the swap meet, hang out with my friends, meet new friends who are in the same world of shows and games that I played. And I'm like, what like an unreal blessing that we're in this fear. Like, so I really have to sometimes like stop and like think about it and be like, thank you. Like for where I'm at in my life.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Because I know I'm very aware there's millions. Yes. Quite literally millions of people who would kill to be in situations like we are doing this, living with friends and having fun. And it's like, What a unbelievable place.
And I have to say, though, I think they'll regret killing later, because if I had killed to be here today, I'd be thinking about it right now. Like, that is true. Shouldn't have killed that guy.
Just shut up and stare at NES games again.
And honestly, like, you guys are unquestionably some of the greatest people I've met.
We were saying it when literally behind your back. I'm like, yeah. Literally, I was like, dude, whoops. Thank God. Like, these guys are super cool, down-to-earth dudes.
Oh, well, that's nice.
You never know when you're like, we know you're actors that we like, but come to our podcast and we could be at lunch. Like, Curtis, how do we get out of this?
These guys suck. And the fact that you guys came out swap meeting with us, which is like, no.
Oh my gosh, yeah. Dude, that was, I wish it didn't rain because I would have stayed there all day. I know. Love that stuff.
Same. As soon as I mentioned swap meet to my wife, she's like, oh, we're coming.
Yeah, and honestly, you got to come back.
Her jam is the swap meet.
When I mentioned swapping meat with Curtis's mom, she gets really. Yeah.
I was going to do a wife swap thing with Jason's wife. But I didn't work. You beat me too.
You got to take the kids though too.
Hard pass.
Yeah.
And you know, thank you guys for being here. And you know, guys, you guys can expect them at SoCal Gaming Expo.
Come June to 8th, SoCal.
June 9th. Wait, when is that?
June 8th and June 9th at the Pasadena Center.
Go say hi to them. Have them do some voices. Shove a non-vegan chili dog in Jason's mouth.
Sure.
I'm sorry.
I can't wait until they shove a non-vegan chili dog into my mouth.
We used to have a thing where we'd slap each other on our shows, and like people who watch our show would come up and slap us, and I was like, I don't know if I'm super comfortable with that.
Yeah.
They'll have a table, right?
Absolutely. Yeah, yeah.
And guys, get lined up because their table is going to be filled. I already know it.
You guys need to plug anything? Are you guys good? Yeah. Anything?
You guys got any? Jeez, I mean, when does this come out?
This will be out in about probably a month April. From the date. So in April.
I think just follow us on Instagram and Twitter and Facebook, I guess, if that's still a thing now.
Yeah, and I'll make sure to put all their links to their socials and everything. How about you, Pete?
Yeah, no, I mean, look, Jason and I are touring the country right now and soon the world. Doing the thing, and just honestly, we just love meeting you guys. Yeah. So come out, say hi, and show us
your art too. There have been so many people who have
that scared me for a second. I was like, what is he gonna show us? Your what, dude?
Yeah, just that skateboard over there is a fan art right there. So yeah.
I will say that all of the art that I sell at my table that I sign. Is fan art that I have commissioned and gotten permission to use because I like you guys supported my art, so I'm going to support yours.
That's good. So awesome. Jason would never do that.
No, he's never.
He's so commercialized.
This took you 18 days? And just
I actually heard him. We're eating lunch. I heard him say, screw the people.
Yeah, screw the people.
Over and over and over. Yeah.
And over and over. And over. All right, guys. Thank you guys for being here. We really appreciate it.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you guys.
All right. Well, then I guess. All right, guys. We're going to insert this one a little bit earlier into the episode just because somebody answered it, didn't answer it. And Rip loves making fun of my...
Johnny.
Yeah. And Rip loves making fun of me as I stutter. So one of the questions that didn't get answered was, do you play your Sonic games?
Your Sonic games. You... Jason Griffith. How many Sonic games you've been in, by the way?
I don't know. I guess as many as Pete and a couple more.
How many is that?
I think, probably the same because it was 06 your first game.
I need a number,
Shadow,
boys.
Shadow the Hedgehog was my first.
I need a number. How many games do you think you've been voiced in?
Sonic games? Probably 15 or 16-ish.
Wow. I'm going to guess 9 for you.
Okay, 9.
9 or 10.
And are those mostly from Xbox era on?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, they were on, I want to say they were multi-platform, all the games were.
Okay. Mm-hmm. What's like the newest Sonic you guys did? Do you know?
The last one that I remember doing was Sonic Unleashed, although people have told me Riders was after Sonic. Mm-hmm. But when we recorded the games, we were recording multiple games at once. Mm-hmm. So we would flip from this script to this script, and they wouldn't have names. They wouldn't have titles at this point.
Did you do Sonic Colors?
I did not do.
No.
That's Wii,
no,
right? That's Wii.
Yeah.
I think.
That's too new.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So my last game was Sonic Unleashed, where but the thing was, when the people came in from San Francisco and Japan to record the game, you had to record it that week. And I remember that specific week, I thought I had strep throat. It was like I swallowed glass at some point. And if you've ever played that game...
It was from those chicken parm sandwiches.
It was the chicken... That's when I quit.
It should have been the jalapeno chips that scratched your throat.
Could have been that too. Or the raspberry iced tea that I washed it all down with. But I played the Werehog as well. And that required me to do these excruciatingly loud and long screams. And
I saw that from our fans asking in the question. Someone said, did Jason recover from the Werehog?
I did, but it took a long time. And so what they'd want is a 12-second scream, a 15-second scream, an 18-second, because they didn't know how long it was going to last.
What
you
does
know?
The scream sound like?
Are you ready?
Yes.
Yeah, you might want to back a little bit away from the mic, but sure. That's
now imagine you think you have strep throat and they ask you to do that two takes of that length, two takes of a 15 second, two takes of a 8 second. And every so if you play that game and you hear that scream, just know that back to the past Jason is tasting blood. Because that every single scream,
just I was clenching his butt.
Oh, legit.
It was really clenching his
right
butt.
Right before this interview and, or this podcast, I did that.
he wanted to let him know he took a big dump before this podcast.
Goofy into it.
But So Chris Colay was the director on that game, and he knew I was suffering. And I think that the fifth time they're asking for a different length, I just remember Chris turning to the guys and going, guys, I think we got it. You know, like, I think we got it. And I was laying down in a break room on my breaks, drinking like hot and sour soup. It was the most intense recording situation in my life. But I also feel like it made me push my performance in a way that I didn't want to sound sick. And I think for some reason, that's why a lot of people will say, this is my favorite game. Sonic sounds completely different in this game. It's just a whole different vibe. And I think it's because I just was like, I was well every single week up until this week. I'm not going to sound sick now for this game, you know?
That's like your Jordan flu game. Like that was like your reference to that.
How did Michael Jordan would play when he had the flu?
Oh, Jordan flu. I'm like, who is this Jordan flu?
Sorry. I know.
Kobe too, right? He would play with the flu?
No, he basically tore his Achilles and still walked off the court.
There you go. Okay, I think you guys still dodge the question, politicians.
He's good at that. I
played 06. I played 06, and I think that's the only one.
He earned his stripes.
So, kind of. So if you were in 15 and you only played one, you're still a naughty hot hedgehog.
Yeah.
I don't know what that meant. I'm going to call my wife that later.
Now I have my new screen name is the naughty hedgehog.
they need that. What about you?
Surprisingly,
Go on.
I have never played any of the games that I voiced.
Okay, here you go. The door's right there. He got sad.
Not that I didn't want to, but I didn't. By that time, I didn't even own a television. I was living in Times Square in a. Two of my apartments would have fit in this room. Next to it was actors, artists, and the formerly homeless. And some
things, by the way,
it was really hard to tell who was who.
Yeah.
Only time I was ever punched in my face was by my neighbor in my hallway. The only time I was ever exposed to people smoking crack was in my building. Okay.
Wow.
So I didn't have a TV. I certainly didn't have a gaming system. And at that point, I had played so many video games growing up that I wasn't interested in buying any new ones.
So you're telling me that you were Sonic and getting paid this money, but you weren't getting paid enough to be able to.
No, I was, but I just didn't. I just didn't invest in a gaming system.
Got it. Okay.
That being said, I would have loved to have played one of my games. I don't know how they, you know, when people tell me they love them or they hate them, I don't have an opinion either way. All I can pull from is my experience of standing there thinking, when are they going to fire me? Of course, they're going to realize that they've made a terrible mistake by hiring me.
Well, Jason, we don't have any of the games, but we do have crap. And I can punch you in the face.
So
here we go.
Next podcast.
This podcast took a turn.
Can you throw in a handful of roaches?
Dude, that is actually like, how about on our show?
Yeah.
Sometime we get you to play your games for the first time. I think it'd be a.
I'll consider it.
I'll consider it done.
Let's do it. Do this.
Tell me,
what do you
want me to do? I'm not going to make you do it in the Sonic voice the whole time.
I'll play the whole game like this. What are you doing, Sonic? Jump! There is use.
I want some Sonic dialogue between you two. Is that too corny to ask you guys to do that?
Hey, Silver, I really like your hat.
Hey, thanks. It's called self-promotion.
I see that. This is called Carol Burnett's hair. This is called Barbara Streisand on the Superman album's hair.
I don't know what you're talking about. I'm from the future. I don't know who Carol Burnett or Barbara Streisand are.
I know who they both are, and I love them. This is Shadow the Streisand.
I just realized that Shadow the Hedgehog sounds like Shadow Stevens, the announcer from the 80s. Is that how you who you based him?
What
is
in
he
the same.
Center square?
I did base this voice on a roommate I had.
Shadow?
Yes. I had a roommate named Carl who was a good 15, 20 years older than me and chain smoked and was a writer and was very mysterious. Always wanted to talk about his book. And so when I went into audition for Shadow, I was like, oh, I'll just do Carl, you know?
That is
the ultimate
cool.
life form, and I'd like to speak about my book.
Have you been Carl royalties?
I'm just kidding. Yeah. I didn't get him, so as soon as I get him, yeah, as true. Soon as I get him, he'll get him.
So explain that. I think we mentioned it either this podcast or the earlier one, the royalties thing. So with that stuff, you guys were just paid out up front. That's it. There is. Mm-hmm. Was there an opportunity like ever in the future? Like,
no.
Hey, maybe.
No, you were completely in their hands. As a matter of fact, I'm pretty sure. I cannot remember. But I'm pretty sure we both found out at that awful convention that we were at. They were like, hey, some fan in like a panel. All we did was panels and never like signings or anything like that. And someone was like, how do you feel about them replacing you and replacing Four Kids as the production company? And I remember being like, wait, what? Like, I had no idea.
Yeah.
And I think the only one who did know was Mike Pollock, because he was the only one they kept on.
Yeah. And I believe he had to re-audition for that as well.
Is Four Kids still around?
No.
It's Activision?
It's Konami now.
Konami.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think their only... I don't want to speak out of turn, but I think their only property is Yu-Gi-Oh! At this point.
So, allegedly.
Allegedly, yeah. I don't know.
With you guys with the royalties thing, was this all the way through all of your Sonic type stuff that you guys did, like all the way through, you weren't getting royalties, or was there ever a point where you're like,
well, there's no, first of all, there's no royalties for video games as it is.
It's just contracted.
Ever. Even
See,
today. Even
that.
Today. No.
Okay, I didn't know that.
You there's session fees, and they're great session fees if it's union, but there were never royalties. The only thing that would have paid royalties would have been the TV show, but that was also non-union at the time. So
got it. So you didn't nothing with that as well.
Nope.
Have you played any other games other than Sonic that you were voicing in?
Okay, so for a split second, I played Mario and Sonic at the Olympics.
Oh! Because
I bought it for my brother for Christmas back in 2000.
So you're a liar, is what you're saying.
Yeah. I like Pete.
Just straight up.
Dude, he's a fibber.
Professional.
A fibber?
But that doesn't really count, because I believe it was one of the games where they took, which is another great thing they can do when it's non-union, they just grab your sound and put it into a different game and go, sorry, no pay for you.
Oh, I recorded for that one.
Oh, you did? Okay.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Well, that's because all of Silver's Lines were so super dramatic in 06.
Oh.
And then now it's like, hey, I'm riding the skateboard or whatever I did. I don't know. Snowboard, whatever it was.
It is so crazy to hear your guys' voices just right in front of me. And it's like, we know your guys' voices on the video games, but it's just even gnarlier that it's in person.
My brain's just trying to put myself into your guys' positions and scenarios years ago. It's such an interesting thing.
It really is mind-blowing. And like you said, you just have to thank God, the universe, or whatever, for the ability to speak for a living. I mean, really what we're doing. We're speaking for a living. And it's not even like it's not even like ancillary. Like for some people, it meant so much. And it's like, how does that... And we get paid to do it, you know?
Yeah.
And we get to travel around.
Yeah,
and
that's the coolest part. Like, I was saying to you earlier that when I did this thing and then I moved out to LA and I had booked a TV show and then the writers went on strike and a TV show no longer existed. But I was like, no, I'm a serious actor now. And like, I recorded Silver from LA, but I never like when people brought that up, I just pushed it away. I was like, nah, it's not what I want to be associated with. I want to be, you know, I'm a serious actor. Even if I was doing comedy, it's like, no, I'm a real actor. And then I'm like, what am I talking about? This is affected. First of all,
huge.
if you total the TV, film, and music industry, they don't even come close in comparison to the video game industry as far as income goes or profit goes.
Sales.
So what was I thinking? Like, there's such a larger audience in the video game world. And then I realized like how much effect we had on these people. And I told you this earlier where my acting coach, my current acting coach was like, hey, how are these conventions going? And I was like, every artist's dream is to affect somebody in some way.
Yeah.
And the last thing I thought it would be was through a 14-year-old hedgehog. But here we are. Yeah. Here and are. I'm so lucky. And what an idiot I was in my like late 20s, early 30s to just try to push that away. What if I would have embraced it? Maybe we would have gotten to the fans earlier. I don't know.
Also, I want to just step back for a second and talk about when we were speaking about nostalgia. The very first so I didn't have a television, but I had a laptop in Times Square. And when I found, hold on, I got to show it.
Uh-oh.
When I found
plugging other people's
He's
YouTube
the
show.
Angry video game nerd.
That really it opened so much memory locks and whatnot for me that I became an AVGN junkie. I was I watched every episode multiple. It was all I was watching. So Same. when I was recording Sonic, when I was doing all the games and everything, and I would go home at night, I would bring my pizza or my
chicken parm or jalapeno chips
up to my room, and I would put on like a playlist of AVGN right from the beginning. I could recite it word for word, but still it touched that nostalgic part
How
of me.
How did you keep the ladies away?
You were such a
chicken
stud.
Chicken parm, jalapeno chips, and angry video game
was
nerd.
Was it the crack outside?
No joke. The day I left my apartment to move in with my now wife in Brooklyn, I came back for something, and I noticed, I was like, and it glanced in my mind. I was like, oh, the window shot out. That's weird. In the lobby. And then I asked one of the security guards, I said, what happened? He's like, double homicide murder, homicide suicide last night. I was like, ooh. Oh man, I got out just in time.
I got out just in time.
Do you guys have a dream voiceover role? If you could pick one dream role that they're like, hey, we're going to replace this voice. Do you have one that would be your ultimate holy grail?
Pete probably has a better answer for it, but I think I already did it. You know, I can't think of anything being cooler than having been Sonic and Shadow. It's hard for me to. Yeah, I'd love to do The Simpsons. You know, like
I was literally thinking that in my head, like a Homer.
I mean, I grew up. That's all I watched. You know, The Simpsons and Full House. That was like every single VHS
Full
tape.
House.
Oh, dude, I was in love with Candace Cameron and wanted to be Uncle Jesse. So
that's my daughter. My kids aren't allowed to watch much, to be honest, but that is her thing.
Oh yeah.
She has gone through that more times than I can tell you. The original Full House.
It's so amazing.
It really is.
I think that's, I don't know. I mean, like every job I do, I feel like I'm so lucky to do. I don't think there's any small job that I'm like, this is beneath me. Or I'm always like, how am I here right now? Like at Warner Brothers or Sony or Paramount. I'm just like, how am I here right now? You know,
yeah. Well, here am I here? At the Pixel Podcast.
For sure. Here at the Pixel Podcast, like 100 times in my mind, I'm like, isn't this crazy, Jason, that we're here being interviewed? Right. Like, okay, shut up. Look at the games.
Yeah, you stare at the games.
I have two, any Muppet and any X-Men.
Ooh. Let's get more specific then.
Yeah.
Okay, yes, Pete, you can pick your X-Men. Who would you choose?
I said any because I was so torn between Wolverine, because I would love to do a Wolverine, but I also love Gambit so much.
Literally the two I would have picked.
Yeah, those are my two favorites. Have you watched X-Men 97 yet?
Not the new one yet.
Oh, it's fantastic.
Not the new
one
yet.
No one likes Cyclops.
He's great in X-Men 97. Like, they really redeem him in this. So I was actually kind of upset that I was like, I never even got an opportunity to read for that show.
How would you have done Wolverine?
I don't know.
I'm not sure.
I was prepared or anything. this would be my first shot. Hey, Jason. Why don't you get me a chicken parm, bub?
Extra cheese, Mr. Wolverine.
Oh, mon ami, can I get some of them jalapeno chips?
Oh, God.
I love Gambit, it's funny. Gambit's voice, too, is never a voice. Like, when I was a kid, I don't feel like I resonated what his voice actually was until I was older. And I'm like, I feel like my brain, when I rewatched it as an adult, was like, I don't, that's not what I pictured Gambit sounding like, well, but it is. But
he's, because he's Cajun. He's a, yes. He's a Cajun thief.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's great. I love it. I love it. The one I just did, terrible, but I could probably do a good Gambit.
Yeah, just with your practice. I got that. Dang.
I'd do my next door neighbor in Times Square named Tony. Tony's the one who punched me in the face. And also, one day, later on, I got a big television my mom shipped me, and I decided to throw it out. And I said to Tony, I said, hey, man, do you want my TV before I throw it out? And his girlfriend was there. And he goes, oh, no, man, I got HD TV, man. I was like, okay, that's fine. And so later on, I get a call from his girlfriend who lived in the building. And she said, you keep your tacky television, you loser from Cleveland.
For real?
I got a message on my home phone. And so I called Tony. I'm like, hey, man, I'm sorry. I just got a call from Judy. And I didn't mean to offend you or anything. And he went, oh, don't worry about that, man. That's just a woman thing.
Sorry, I like that. That's pretty funny.
I don't know if you want to go too much in depth with like a little bit like with Pokemon, like how I was working on those.
How many
of
have you done?
Yeah.
I've done so many creatures.
Ish. You got a number?
In the 50s range, I think. I don't know. They're all listed on IMDb. But there's always so many one-offs. It's like, oh, I did that one. Like, there are ones like Scraggy that I've done over and over and over. Mm-hmm. But then there's ones that I can't even remember because I did them one time. The one that gave me the most trouble was Bear Tick, because it had to do it in such a way that I would hiccup every single time I did it. And we would just have to do take after take until I wasn't hiccuping, or they could edit it out. Like, if I could hold it for 1 second after doing that. But that's...
You'd think you'd just voice it different.
Nope. Cool. That was the one they wanted.
Yeah.
But I have to say, working on Pokemon is one of the most challenging shows because they're so meticulous about a certain sound, a certain performance, and they will do take after take after take if they, you know, you would think it would be easy. This is, you're just saying a creature name, but no, they're very, very particular about it. And I think it's great. I think that lends itself to how good the show is and why it's so popular.
It's crazy because Pokemon has been revamped realistically in the last couple of years. I feel like it's become a way more popular.
Oh my gosh.
When Pokemon Go came out, I always said that was the time to where when people said they weren't gamers, showed that they were gamers. Because there were so many people that are, games are dumb, games are lame, and then Pokemon Go came out and everybody who never played games was going wild.
Anytime anybody relaunches, even with Sonic, like people are like, well, what do you feel about the movies? Keep making the movies, because that just reminds people of the games and the cartoons and all the stuff that we got to do. So like the more that people are exposed to this stuff, the more people fall in love with the franchises.
Did you guys, when the new Sonic stuff is happening, was there any like attempt at your guys, like through your manager, your agent, or anything? Are you guys mentally like, do we have a chance at any of this type of stuff?
I think by the time I knew about it, there was already someone attached to Sonic. It wasn't like, oh, we're looking for someone. Although I remember being in session at Warner Brothers, and I got a call from my agent saying TMZ wanted to interview me about Sonic's new appearance and what I thought of it.
When it was still bad?
Before they fixed revamped it. Yeah. And that never happened. But I just thought it was so weird. They're like, they're going to ask me what I think of a flocked Sonic.
Yeah. What'd you think of it?
I don't know. I didn't have an opinion. I think
they did it on purpose. I think it was a total, like, we're going to make this look really bad, and then people are going to talk about it. And then everyone's going to, if that wasn't a PR move, it should have been, because it got people talking about Sonic.
I actually know a guy, I won't say who, because I wasn't supposed to, who got a call when the reception was so bad that he was one of the, like, I think like six people they called in to help go in there and tell them this is how you should make him look.
Yeah, I know a person that did that.
Oh, there you go. There you go.
Wow.
So is Silver or Shadow coming into the
Shadow
one?
Will be in this next one. They haven't announced who voices him yet.
It's John
Griffin.
John Wick, maybe.
And then so my agent reached out immediately to them and was just like, is Silver going to be in it? And that, you know, obviously it hasn't been for the first three movies. So who knows what'll happen in the future, and who knows if they'll you never know who's going to reach out for what. Let's hope for the that is not a teaser. I'm not saying any.
Can I get a meeting with your agent who reaches out immediately when something like this happens?
You heard it here, folks. He's sending samples.
He's silver. They're doing it. Part four now.
And I feel like I can't plug this enough, guys. These guys will be at SoCal Gaming Expo and June 8th and June 9th of the Pasadena Center. And
I'm telling you, this event has taken a life in the past couple months of like, I feel like it's going to be much bigger than we expected.
Oh, it's going to be great.
As far
it's
as
gonna be awesome. It's gonna be so much
turnout
fun.
And how it's happening, what's happening. So.
Also, it's the week after my birthday, so I accept any and all presents.
Dude, yep. Honestly, I think Jason will give you a $100 gift.
This was a gift from a fan at my first signing.
Your bling bling?
The bling. I guess they don't make this anymore. And I was like, are you sure you want to give this to me? It was like this army dude, big army dude. I'm like, and he's very emotional as he's giving this to me. I'm like, you could destroy me.
It was
like,
Sergeant what? Slaughter.
It was Sergeant Slaughter in the flesh. Huge Sonic fan. And when he gave this to me, I thought to myself, well, surely they'll bring me jewelry at every event. And then never again.
But yeah, guys, go visit their table at SoCal. And like I said, all their links and their socials will be in the description with the full audio podcast as well. So thank you guys, Jason and Pete. You guys are amazing.
Thank you guys. Getting my name right.
John!
Tim Griffin was a great Buzz Woody. All right.